say my name.
Just a game. It's a religion. Costa Popolius and Stephen Hindle take a look at the week that was and what's coming for your Montreal Canadiens. Welcome to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of Breaking Habs Radio here on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. I, of course, am your host, Costa Popolius, joined, as always, by Stephen Hindle. Steve, how you doing?
Surviving. It's been a long season, and yes, it hurts to see it end the way it did, and being only a fresh day removed from the end of the Canadian season, it's not all candies and rainbows right now, but a lot of positives to build on, lots to consider as well, starting in nets and maybe with the, let's just say, Herculean task of getting the Canadiens to the conference finals and Stanley Cup finals, perhaps being too large a challenge for any one man. The Canadiens have a lot of things to consider, but I think starting with helping Carey Price, that's where you need to begin.
Of course, last night, the Montreal Canadiens dropping Game 6 to the Tampa Bay Lightning at Amalie Arena in Tampa Bay, ultimately by a score of 4-1, losing the series 4-2. A series where Montreal pretty much dominated 4 out of the 6 games that they played. A lot of iron being hit by the Canadiens as the series went along. A lot of, you know, missed chances. A power play that was completely abysmal, a penalty kill that didn't work anywhere near the clip that it did during the regular season.
The not-so-special teams.
No, the not-so-special teams and the questions that come from that. And let's start, Steve, with the game as it was itself. Montreal flat-footed, no energy, no speed, and it looked like Tampa took complete advantage of it.
Deer in the headlights, and Michel Therrien was trying to back his players up by saying that perhaps the emotions and fatigue had finally caught up to the Canadiens, but it's a little bit of a harsh statement coming from a coach who had been pushing this team to look beyond those mortal elements, you know? And of course, everybody expecting Carey Price to play like a god.
He did. I mean, look, short of scoring goals, he did everything you expect your goaltender to do. In one game, he allowed 6 goals. A lot of them not his fault because the team just didn't show up for that hockey game.
Well, you don't count those. You can't count the aberrations. And same goes for Ben Bishop.
Yeah.
That 6-2 game, well, that was his night off as well. And what it boils down to is the 4 games of the series, 3, which were very close, and 1.
And 2 of which Montreal got very unlucky.
Yeah,
you look
okay.
at the offside overtime goal in game one, and then in game three, the goal was 1.1 seconds left on the clock. Do you bring that as saying the Montreal Canadiens faltered at that point, or did you just say it's sheer dumb luck that Tampa was able to score when they did?
Well, one thing you have to consider is it's about as close as you're going to get to having it go your way. That's the fine line of this series. People think that the Montreal Canadiens were destined to lose against the Tampa Bay Lightning team that had dominated them through the regular season and beyond. But quite frankly, it was the opposite of what we saw in the regular season. The statistical possessions. Lack thereof. But it was all in favor of the Montreal Canadiens in the playoffs in comparison to the regular season,
yep.
the way they dominated the games, the way they took over. They outshot the Lightning 5 out of 6 games. They got to game 6, and they couldn't find a way to do it. Granted, the Lightning were the best team in the NHL at home during the regular season. You can't just, you know, sneeze that away. That is a strength, and when you're the best in a 30-team league at something, it's something they could hang their hat on. Look, the Canadians came home from a 3-0 lead in their series to see against the Ottawa Senators to see Ottawa climb back in before doing away with them in Game 6. It seemed oh so similar to the rhythm of that series, and the Canadians just could not avoid that Game 6 home game for the opposition.
But what got to me last night, Steve, was, like I mentioned before, the Canadians were flat as flat could be coming out of the gate, and they couldn't clear their own zone, which, you know, it led to them being hemmed in more often than not. And what was happening was the defense from the Tampa Bay Lightning were pitching in along the half wall and cutting off the passes. Montreal had nobody in the middle, and you and I have both clamored about the fact that there's no center swinging through the zone and giving players a separate option to be able to clear. That option wasn't there, and you saw them trying out more and more and more to try to get that puck out along the boards. It wasn't happening. Tampa was cutting it off at the offensive blue line and getting transition offense off of that in a short space, creating two-on-ones down low in the Canadian zone.
That was Game 6. Game 4, Game 5, the Montreal Canadiens found the ways to get around these Lightning defenders. One of the differences in Game 6 was that they stood up at the blue line. They played like big defensemen, and for a couple games, the Lightning's defenders, who were very clearly larger than most all of the Montreal Canadiens forwards, didn't play like it, but they did in Game 6. It made a big difference. And, you know, as much as Michel Therrien's comments about, you know, fatigue and the emotional letdown, the comments actually reflect the way the team played, because you could see they just didn't have the spark necessary to make the miraculous Game 6 win possible to get a Game 7. It was so hard to see them not take a shot from the 3 minute and 47 mark of the first period all the way through halfway through in the second period. That was a disastrous game for the Canadiens, which is one of the reasons why Habs fans ripped them all season long for games that they had precisely like that. It's just the wrong time to play that game.
But is it really the players that were mentally fatigued, Steven, or the comment itself coming from Michel Therrien? Is that more a comment about the coaching staff being physically and mentally fatigued? Because after all, a season is a grind not only for the players but for the coaching staff as well. And given the fact that the results the Montreal Canadiens brought to the playoffs were minimal, I mean, at a certain point you have to think that the coaches just didn't have it in them to continue.
Okay, good point on your part, because in terms of the consistency of message, when a message is consistent, it can also become stale. And for the Montreal Canadiens to continue believing in themselves during this playoff run, they did need to have the ability to be creative and unleash a few elements that they weren't allowed to in the regular season. And quite frankly, I don't think we saw them step all that much outside their box. You have to be uncomfortable to win in desperate situations. The Canadiens did not appear uncomfortable, and so they didn't play creative. They didn't try to do things as they did in games 4 and 5 that yielded very good scoring opportunities.
But
where were they for rebounds last night, Coach?
Nowhere.
Aside from P.A. Parenteau's post, which was on a beautiful collection of a rebound, the Canadians really weren't in the right spot. And, you know, Ben Bishop's got his iron buddies to thank for a lot of how this series played out. But He is a goalie's best friend, the post, and there's a reason why goalies rely on them and why that shot does not count on the shot clock. It's the goalie's favor, a hockey post. So the Habs may have hit a lot of them, but it still means they didn't beat Bishop when it mattered most.
You're listening to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network, of course. I am Costa Papoulias along with Stephen Hindle. One of the things that bugs me, though, Steve, is that overall, as you look at this series, six games, and the way Montreal played at certain points and in others, like in Game 6, isn't it really a microcosm of the entire season as a whole and the story of the Montreal Canadiens season? Yes, 110 points, but there were gaps in the way that they played. And, you know, the analytics guys out there all said that Montreal can't sustain this. They did. But we all noticed that Montreal played a better game when they maintained possession of the puck as opposed to dumping and chasing as they normally would under Michel Therrien. This is what the series was. You had games 4 and 5 where Montreal maintained possession of the puck as opposed to dumping it in, and they had positive results. The defenseman skated the puck up the ice. Montreal had positive results.
Games 1 and games 3, they also dominated in
Absolutely.
Possession statistics.
Absolutely.
And so if you really want to cut through it, what this series proved for the Montreal Canadiens is what fans and critics and media alike knew prior to all of the games in the playoffs, which is that the Montreal Canadiens needed more scoring. And when the Canadiens flipped their game on its head and showed the analytics world that they can dominate in every aspect, whatever the case may be, you know what they didn't do? Convert when they dominated. Those posts, those missed opportunities, the low shooting percentage, the terrible power play, all key elements that without the Canadiens, are now out of the playoffs.
But the low shooting percentage, Steve, that also comes from the fact that Montreal wouldn't take shots. I mean, it was highlighted last night, Lars Eller, by Don Cherry even, who turned around and said, you know, he was just outside the faceoff dot. He had a good
it's
angle.
It's not that they
from.
Wouldn't take shots. It's where they would take the shots from. They wouldn't take shots in dangerous areas. And we talked about this forever.
Yeah, they distribute. As opposed to taking shots from the slot, they look to make that last pass to try to get the goaltender moving.
Exactly. And as much as we condoned the notion of getting Bishop moving, you still have to take the opportunity when it's presented. And if you are between the two face-off circles within the boundaries of the scoring area, the slot, you have to take that opportunity. Too many times they passed it up, which is a result of wanting to make the perfect play, but also wanting to beat a goaltender who had caused them problems and perhaps gotten into their heads too. It still all boils back to that needed additional scoring threat for the Montreal Canadiens. And you want to go up and down the lineup, and you know what? We will during this show throughout it. But before we do get there, it just stands to reason that the Canadiens were proving everybody wrong without that top score. They were proving the analytics guys, the old traditional faithful guys, whoever it may be, they were getting it done as the underdogs. They just couldn't pull through in this series where, quite frankly, they were up against a team that were built to beat them.
But see, Michael, the Montreal Canadiens offense seems to be what I would characterize a bizarro offense, because 90% of the teams in the National Hockey League will take that shot from the slot when it's given to them. Montreal seems to funnel it out towards the sides, and it looks like they're trying to get more rebound goals than they are actual shots on goal. And that, to me, is the problem. You look at guys in the middle, Thomas Pekanis, for example, will not shoot from the slot. He'll distribute. Unless he brings the puck in himself and he flips it, you know, as he does his patented little flip pass to himself and tries to fire the puck. Alex Galchenyuk will skate the puck into the middle, and once he gets to the middle, as opposed to pulling the trigger, he'll try to distribute off to the sides. It's the same with David Desharnais, notoriously. He does not take shots when he has quality scoring chances available to him. Is this the players themselves, or is this the coaching staff tell him, no, funnel it?
It's very
difficult.
They
can't see you shrug.
you got to take a minute to think about it, because is it the coach's fault? Is it the player's fault? Is it a combination of both? This is a team that collected 110 points in the regular season, and for all their scoring woes, they were the best defensive club in the NHL, and a lot of people like to pin it on Carey Price, but there are six guys on a regular basis that make that possible for Carey Price, and you know what, he was a big reason why they had all of this success, but he too is not a god and understands that he's mortal. As much as he tried to pin the loss of the series on himself, he realized that he could have been better. And as much as we find it hard to believe that he could have been better and cut him some slack in games in certain situations during the playoffs, it would have helped the Canadiens if he was his stingy self. But every once in a while, he has a tough game. That's the beauty of the parity of the playoffs. You're going to go up against a club that can beat you on any given night. And I believe it was Pierre LeBrun coined this earlier this week. He said, you're going to end up seeing this a whole lot more often moving forward. The parity in the NHL, the talent of the players, a 3-0 lead, where you are ranked heading into the playoffs, home ice advantage, all of these elements are going to slowly start to disappear as the teams bunch up, as they did this year. So close all season long, that goes through the playoffs.
And since you mentioned before that in the second segment, we're going to go around the roster and give our assessments about the players on the Montreal Canadiens roster. We'll take this time in the first segment to assess the coaching staff. And very simply, if you look at Michel Therrien's body of work and his assistants.
Wait, let me stop you there. Before we assess them, let's do a general insta-check now that the season's over. Given the results, your Marc Bergevin, Mike Babcock's on the market, regardless of Therrien's contract.
I didn't even want to touch that.
Do you consider it?
Any responsible owner and general manager would. You'd be an idiot not to. So then,
with that in mind, how do you evaluate the coaching staff knowing full well that perhaps the juiciest piece of prime meat is on the market for your taking? And you have to consider Babcock being a Montreal or a McGill graduate. The Canadiens might be a place he would want to land.
Absolutely. His wife, I believe, is from Montreal as well, right? Here is how you assess it, and it's very easy for Marc Bergevin to filter out whether or not the coaching staff is on the same page. Very simply, you bring in your two assistants, J.J. Daigneault and Daniel Lacroix. Daigneault, of course, I believe survived the Jacques Martin era. He's been here quite a while. It's time to assess him because the defense has not gotten better under him.
It's hard to do that when they finish first in the NHL as the best defensive club.
I totally agree, but there is also the fact that they don't generate any offense from their defense and they have trouble getting the puck out of the zone. That is a question that you have to ask J.J. Daigneault because, after all, it's his philosophy that gets the defenseman to play that certain way.
As a defense core, I'm going to agree with you, but again, you're talking about guys like P.K. Subban and Andrei Markov who finished within, P.K. in the top 4 or 5 of scoring among defensemen.
Agreed.
Markov within the top 15, if not 20. So they do have producers back there. But it's getting away from individual producers, much as is the focal point of the Canadiens' failures in the playoffs. Even when they proved the analytics guys wrong, it was the no goals,
scoring,
no added offense.
And then that's where we come to Daniel Lacroix and Clément Jodoin as well. Clem Jodoin was responsible for the power play last season and at the beginning of this year. As it continued to flounder, the responsibility fell on Daniel Lacroix, another guy who is a defensive-minded forward. And he wasn't able to bring the power play up in any way, shape, or form. In fact, they looked stagnant, they looked flat, they were immobile, and they were easy to defend. There is another assessment that has to be made. And once you speak to those two assistants and get their views on what they think of Michel Therrien and his job overall, then you ask Michel Therrien, and if Therrien throws them under the bus, you know there's a problem behind your bench.
And then, just for good measure, I'd call P.K. Subban and Carey Price into the office and ask them what their experience was under Mike Babcock and Team Canada, because
absolutely
that might play a very big role into who they want leading them in the future as well.
Don't forget that very, very honestly and clearly, Mike Babcock explained that P.K. Subban, it was his first experience at the Olympic level. He will play in the future, but he's very keen on the left-right matchup with his defense core. He stuck to that. He did not waver from that. You have to give him props. He was clear, and he stuck to the exact message that he gave P.K. Subban. And to top all that off, he spoke very highly of P.K. and his contribution to the team, despite the fact that he only played one game.
I just want to add the fact that if you look at the way Marc Bergevin has done things for the Montreal Canadiens, he's a Bowman product. Well, Mike Babcock is a Bowman product too. Montreal was the original home of Scotty Bowman, and their values together combined would bring a big change, I think, to completing the true philosophy Bergevin has for this team, as well as achieving the goals he's setting forward. We'll see what comes, but I got to tell you, this situation with the coaching staff and the players, it would be a mood issue were Mike Babcock not on the market.
Absolutely. That's it for your first segment here on Breaking Habs Radio. Coming up in the second segment, it's report card time, the time my kids absolutely hate, and I'm sure yours do too. We'll be back in a few minutes. Stay tuned.
We'll be back with more Breaking Habs Radio. Everybody knows that particular situation when a date starts off really well. And then she asks that terrible question, do you have a condom? But did you ever notice that you never have a condom when you need it? There is a solution. SOS Condoms Application. SOS Condoms will save your date in every situation. Wherever the place, you just have to locate yourself, and our teams will take care of the rest. Here is SOS Condoms, the new application powered by Durex. SOS Condoms. It will save your date. Click here to download it on the App Store or order direct on www.sos-condoms.com. Now available in Dubai.
Okay, welcome. Is there anything I can get you before we start? Glass of water?
You may dispense with the pleasantries.
Okay, great.
At the end of the road, turn round.
Okay, I'm going to stop you. The line is at the end of the road, turn right.
That is what I said.
Terrific. So let's just try it again.
At the end of the road, turn round.
Let's just go forward. Okay, we're at page 5.
Page 5?
I'm sorry, page 7. We're at page 7.
I don't have a page 7. You have reached your destination.
Is there any way you could breathe a little quieter?
What do you mean quieter? This is how I breathe. Please take the third exit on the roundabout.
It's roundabout.
Correct. You should have seen his face when I told him I was his father. I told my son, who did not know that I was his father, that I was his father.
Yeah, and there's a twin sister involved.
Ah. Here it is.
Whoa. You know what? Let's move forward. That's fine.
Silence. Roundabout.
It's about being around.
Don't underestimate the power of the dark side.
Now, back to Breaking Habs Radio.
Mr. Hindle, it's report card time. Time to give our marks to the players on the Montreal Canadiens. One that we're not going to touch, of course, is Carey Price. But let's begin with your assessment up front, starting with the man expected to be the next captain of the Montreal Canadiens, that being Max Pacioretty.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about, you know, Michael McCarron, because they've just got all kinds of assistance now.
That's third segment. Move forward. Let's go.
Don't you go jumping off the cliff, too, my friend.
They fell off the cliff yesterday. Max Pacioretty, let's go.
Max Pacioretty, don't count your chickens before they hatch, friends. Will he be the next captain of the Montreal Canadiens? Don't put it past the Habs to do that and make him the individual. But I think it worked rather well this year, and I don't know if this team is even ready to move ahead with a captain next year.
Two seasons without?
Gaining the leadership this year has been a successful step forward for both P.K. Subban and Max Pacioretty. Max Pacioretty is a proven star for the Montreal Canadiens. One thing we are missing is this a guy who has another tier to his success? Is he a 37, 39 goal scorer regularly? Or if, as many believe, this guy might be able to pot 46, maybe he can even hit 50 with the right guys by his side. And his love for David Desharnais, you know, knows no bounds, but I tell you what, talent does. And for Desharnais, it might mean the end, as perhaps now Montreal Canadiens management see that to take it to the next level, they will have to set Max Pacioretty free even more so than he already has. And as far as a grade goes, he doesn't get one because he achieved true success. And I think that you don't want to label him right now. You want to let him build on what he has built for himself over the last two seasons and see what the team does for him.
I think what I want to bring to this is I like Max Pacioretty's game. I love the way he plays the game of hockey, his speed, his size, his physicality. He has the entire package. The only problem that I have with Max Pacioretty is that his focus on defense this year took away from his offensive game, in my opinion. I think trying to get back into the defensive zone and helping out that much more, you know, it took away a little bit from what he brings on the offensive side. And to that effect, I think it affected his line mates a little bit as well.
Okay, maybe. But then I want you to turn around and ask yourself, how much did Max Pacioretty's defensive awareness improve this year?
Oh, by leaps and bounds.
And so that's why I say you don't want to grade this guy, because it's really unfair to not give him anything short of, you know, an A, as he repeated his performance from last year.
There's a grade.
But it's not fair, because you don't know if he's a B player or an A-plus player.
I don't think he's a B player. I think right now he's sitting at an A-minus for me, simply because he doesn't have any complementary players on his wing. He needs that centerman to be able to funnel the puck to and to go back and forth. The give and go, if you watch it with Thomas Plekanec when they're shorthanded, is a thing of beauty when the two of them are on the ice together. They tried to bring that success in the regular season as well when they were together on the ice along with Brendan Gallagher. It didn't work out quite as well, but you have to give them props because they played absolutely fantastic to get together on the penalty kill.
And I think we'll move forward onto some other guys from this discussion here, but a perfect jumping point would be to David Desharnais. But I think that you have to really focus in on how the end of the season revealed that, yes, Max Pacioretty and Thomas Plekanec were together once again. The season ended with Gallagher on their wing. Many complain about Brendan Gallagher's role as a top six forward. You can't deny the 47 points he put up.
They're dummies.
His size is an issue, but they have little blue pills to fix that. When it comes to hockey, you can't fix heart. Brendan Gallagher's got it. He overcomes the size. Desharnais doesn't have that heart. Now, does he, coach?
No, he doesn't. And that's simply the problem. Let me backtrack a little bit here. It's not that he doesn't have the heart.
With Max Pacioretty, we expect a greater tier of talent. I don't think he has tier of heart that Gallagher can achieve.
I don't believe that David Desharnais doesn't have heart, because if you look at his journey to the National Hockey League, it takes a hell of a lot of heart to get there. But I think the problem is that he peaked when he got to the National Hockey League, and he made himself very easy to figure out, never modified his game to what the other teams were throwing at him. And given the fact that he's small and that he refuses to shoot the puck, I mean, he gets a D for me.
A double D for you? No, you know what? He was not as successful as he was last year. He's not going to get a D because he was rather successful on face-offs this year. He had a good percentage in the neighborhood of 51% or 52%, pardon me. He also managed to produce somewhere in the neighborhood of 48 points during the regular season, but as you said, he doesn't shoot. He only had 12 goals on the season, and a major problem for the number one center of the Montreal Canadiens is that people know what he's going to do. Also, who he's going to look for. So, you know what? The book being out on David Desharnais, it might be time to move on from him for the simple reason that if you're ending the season with Thomas Plekanec on your top line, and Thomas Plekanec along with Andre Markov are your two most seasoned and veteran Montreal Canadiens, many want to see Thomas Plekanec go. But I certainly don't want to see a potential annual Selkie candidate shipped out for reasons that Desharnais might have better chemistry based on prior experience.
That's
if anything, the current experience of seeing the season end with Pacioretty, Plekanec, and Gallagher on that top line probably spells huge problems for Desharnais because Alex Galchenyuk was skating on that second line with him. And if there's anybody left from this edition of the Montreal Canadiens who will be on the second line of this team at the start of next year, Galchenyuk's the guy. Desharnais, very unlikely. And Dale Weiss, well, we'll get to him, but we all know he's better suited back down on the third or fourth line.
Well, let's move on, as you mentioned, from, like you said, from David Desharnais. We'll move on to Brendan Gallagher, the heart and soul of the Montreal Canadiens as far as I'm concerned. There's not a thing that you could say about this player to irk me or to say that, you know, he doesn't bring his A game every night. Tony Healy, of course, is listening in on the tweet chat tonight and listening live on our new HD feed on BreakingHabsRadio.net. And he has been talking about Brendan Gallagher all year and how much he loves his heart and soul attitude on this hockey team.
By the way, I just want to add in for all of you listening right now, if you want to join in the conversation with Tony and ourselves on Twitter, use the hashtag BRHA. You can find us in our conversations about the Montreal Canadiens, what we're talking about during the show. And, of course, Tony and I have been going on about this during the show, and his opinions are pretty strong. But you know what? Gallagher is just, you can't have an opinion. He's kryptonite. You can't judge a guy that small who's that successful. He's so young right now that you can't worry about his future, his durability. You have to find a way to maximize him, much as you do with Pacioretty.
Look, you look at Brendan Gallagher, and there's one thing about him that you need to know is he's built like a tank. He may be small, but he's built huge. He's got thunderous legs, a huge upper body, and that's why he can endure the punishment that he does in front of the net, night in, night out. That's why he plays the game on the edge. Anything short of an A-plus for Brendan Gallagher would be a mark that would be remiss.
Look, 25% of his goals on the season were game winners. That would be 6 of his 24. He was third on the Montreal Canadiens, and then in the playoffs, he was a key contributor. He led the team in shots, and you know what? He might have been one of the most physical forwards that the Montreal Canadiens had on their roster in the playoffs. And you know what, Coach? That spells one of the big problems right there, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Your little man being your physical force, that's not how you're going to push your way through a big Tampa Bay Lightning team in the second round. For all the luck they were counting on, it certainly wasn't the hammer of Gallagher driving through Victor Hedman to victory.
No. As we move on to the second line, we remind you that you're listening to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. Costa Papoulias along with Stephen Hindle. Steve, let's take a look at number 27 of the Montreal Canadiens, Alex Galchenyuk. Much maligned during the playoffs. 20-plus goals in the regular season. An okay year as he comes up. But in my opinion, you can't give him a mark because until you place him at center, his natural position, and allow him to freely use the ice to create offense, anything that you say about him is wrong.
Anything you say about him is wrong. Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that, but I will agree with you in the state that this is just not a player that you want to get into arguing about for his facets. You don't want to overexpect from him.
But look, here's what I mean by you can't really grade him. He's playing on a second line where his primary focus is to play up and down, north, south, along the left wing. You rarely see him cut through the middle. When he does cut through the middle, you see how much more effective he becomes. The problem then becomes his line mates being able to recognize the cut towards the middle, to replace him on the far side, as you put so eloquently to Mr. Healy on the tweet chat earlier, and, you know, create that attack triangle to attack the net. They don't do that. It's oftentimes Galchenyuk gets in there and he looks and there's nobody there and he hangs on to the puck that half second too long and it turns around and goes the other way. If you have a guy with the skill set of an Alex Galchenyuk, you need to have guys out there who can read what he's going to do on the ice. Chemistry. You need to have guys that play with him consistently and understand the thought process. The reason why Yari Curry was so effective with Wayne Gretzky is because he knew when Gretzky would move to one side of the ice, Curry could take the other, and he would eventually get the puck because Gretzky would expect him to be there. You cannot do that if you do not have consistency in your line mates.
I couldn't agree more with you, and that was part of Michel Therrien's juggling problems this summer, or excuse me, this winter in Montreal. And for all the success this team had, you can still pinpoint issues. The fact that they have such good young talent is what's really gotten them through over the past couple of years, because they are building forward and towards a prime that will soon be their window of opportunity. Galchenyuk has to find his way to the center position permanently. But this also opens up the position on the second line. Does Brendan Gallagher fall down and fit with him on the second line using the advantage of prior chemistry? And do you open up positions in the top six for new wingers? Because we don't necessarily see Desharnais being a fit in the top six moving forward.
Absolutely not.
And as we jump to the third line, eventually, because we do have to talk about Dale Weiss in a moment, these positions have to be available to fulfill becoming a better team moving forward.
True.
So Dale Weiss was, or is, the new version of Travis Moen, albeit more talented, albeit younger and harder working than Moen was for the Montreal Canadiens, despite his great tenure with the Habs and all of his heart that he put in with the CH. Dale Weiss should not have been there at a time when the Canadiens needed depth and more offensive scoring. And so perhaps it was DSP who should have been in his place at the end of the playoffs. Perhaps it was P.A. Parenteau who was seeing a bit of a surge towards the end in the Tampa Bay Lightning series. But the bottom line is that none of those guys really fit the bill for A, having the chemistry to fit with a Galchenyuk and a Gallagher, or a Plekanec and a Pacioretty. So do you see them having a spot in the bottom six? If you want to talk about PAP, I don't think so. But Dale Weiss is one of those guys who can fit that role. Overexpected to do something important in the playoffs, yes. Did he have a great regular season exceeding expectations? Yes. Regular season gets at least a B or a B-plus from me. And, you know, safe to say that in the playoffs he was a bit of a lucky charm at times, a B-minus in the playoffs. That's just about all you can hope for from a guy of his talent and caliber. He's great. He fits with the Habs, but it's not your top six fit.
Moving on. The man that disappears in the playoffs had a great regular season, but totally, totally disappeared, that being Thomas Plekanec. Showed in game one, and then after game one against Ottawa, didn't do very much out there, didn't produce very much, and he struggled in the faceoff circle as well.
A victim of juggling, right? As all mimes usually are.
Every
Thomas
year.
Plekanec, he goes through the motions in the playoffs because he generally ends up with guys that A, he hasn't had a lot of time playing with, or the guys he's been playing with an awful lot just aren't up to his caliber. Now, we could talk about Galchenyuk and Gallagher being on his wings and that being a fit. At times it worked. Better and more to the point was the solution of having him playing with Max Pacioretty, but they still had a missing link in was Gallagher the right guy for them. So Plekanec gets a pass one way or the other.
True.
Because he is not Desharnais. Plekanec has the two-way talent and the valued importance of being a key faceoff guy, and trust me, at times he wasn't good on the draw in the playoffs, but he made amends for it in other games. There was one game in this series against the Lightning, and he came in around 75 to 80%.
I believe that was game three.
In a game where he took in the neighborhood of something like 31 draws. So, very important player. You don't want to relinquish him. And if you want to grade him on anything, grade him on the ability to have put up 60 points in the regular season and been a constant force for the Montreal Canadiens.
I believe that's the second best total of his career, if I'm not mistaken.
26 goals. He was shooting the puck. He was getting it going for the Montreal Canadiens. But again, when you come back to the playoffs, it's a different beast, which is where these openings in the lineup that we're starting to discuss become where Bergevin and the team need to focus moving forward.
This segment's going really quick, Steve. Let's get to the right wing on the second line. We'll assign that, just for argument's sake, to a P.A. Parenteau.
Well, I think we talked about Dale Weiss, who fulfilled that role in the playoffs.
Yeah, but he played first line, too. We won't even go there.
No,
but let's talk P.A.P.
I'm just saying, you know, P.A. Parenteau, as I said, he simply didn't seem to have the season he wanted to have.
Concussion.
He's
got an excuse built in.
Yeah, I was just going to say, could you ask for more from a guy who had to go through a head injury that he tried to come back from a little too early and caused a little bit more of a setback for him? It's tough to judge this book by its cover, especially because it comes in with a lot of talent and higher expectations. Roy, Tony, I think Jason O is listening in as well. All of our buddies out there tuning in, much appreciated, and all the other listeners chiming in, perhaps yelling at your computers or phones as you listen to this.
That would be weird.
P.A. Parenteau probably should find his way out of Montreal for the fact that if he does have a role with the Montreal Canadiens, it should be in the top six, but he didn't find chemistry with the guys in the top six. We see staying. Do you give him the opportunity? He's got the contract. He is here. He can stay. He can fit. But I didn't see enough from him that I'd want to give him a passing grade moving forward to give him that opportunity. But I certainly wouldn't fail Parenteau for his season because of what he went through.
Absolutely not. And one of the failings for P.A. Parenteau, I think, this season is the fact that Montreal, again, like I said before, plays that north-south game. He's not a north-south player. He's a guy who likes to use all the ice to generate offense. You see him swing from the right to left.
There's a reason he was successful with Tavares and Okposa.
That's exactly where I was going, because they understood what each other was doing on the ice. Again, my reference to the Alex Galchenyuk before. I think that given time, with Alex Galchenyuk possibly at center on a second line and a winger to complement them on the left-hand side, I think that P.A. Parenteau and Galchenyuk could be that second pair that Michel Therrien might be looking for going down the road in the future.
Ooh, we'll see. I'm skeptical as to whether this is going to be, you know, Therrien's team to control. I'm skeptical whether or not the third line will find a solution between Della Rose and Eller, having found chemistry this late into the season. The fact that a 19-year-old became so consistent for the Montreal Canadiens is something that has flown under the radar now.
Absolutely.
The only player of his draft class not picked in the first round to have played in the playoffs. It's rather remarkable to have seen that. Look, you know, Eller's got a bigger role with the Montreal Canadiens moving forward. If moves are made, will they be made? Do those holes open up? And then the fourth line, outside of Brandon Prust, DSP, Dale Weiss, is that your fourth line? Where does Torrey Mitchell fit? Malhotra, Flynn, sounds like spare parts to me. And with McCarron, Scherbak, and the youngsters coming up, choices, they're going to get harder to make.
We're going to get to McCarron, Scherbak, and the rest of those youngsters coming up through the pipe as we end the second segment going into the third. You're listening to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. Stay tuned for more.
We'll be back with more Breaking Habs Radio.
Eastgate Hockey is an educational program for youth hockey players living with type 1 diabetes. But make no mistake, this is no ordinary hockey camp. Eastgate provides on- and off-ice educational sessions designed to improve puck and life skills in a positively charged environment while showcasing how it's possible to successfully manage your diabetes while still having fun. Designed to create new friendships, strengthen bonds, and improve quality of life, Diamedia Solutions, Inc. and D-Skate Hockey are excited to invite you to have fun while playing the sport you love. For more information or to register, visit dskatehockey.com.
Real men of genius.
Real men of genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. In the Car Nose Picker.
Mr. In the Car Nose Picker.
For you, the daily commute isn't simply a drive to the office. It's a hands-on exploration deep into your schnoz.
I'm going in there.
With pinpoint accuracy and sheer determination, you dig for boogers like miners dig for gold.
Hit the jackpot.
And why do you do it? 'Cause the windows are up and you think we can't see you. We can.
How you doing?
We'd like to shake your hand, but you'll have to wash it first.
Mr. Undertaker.
His personality is so magnetic, he is unable to carry credit cards. Even his enemies list him as their emergency contact number. He never says something tastes like chicken. Not even chicken. He is the most interesting man in the world.
I don't always drink beer. Stay thirsty, my friends.
Now, back to Breaking Heads Radio.
Let's take a look at the youngsters moving forward, Steve. You mentioned a couple of them before we went to break. Let's start with the absolute biggest, both figuratively and on the ice, that being centerman Michael McCarron.
Who is currently losing 5-4 to the Erie Otters, and after what was a great start to tonight's Game 4, as they fight off Erie in the OHL Finals, the Oshawa Generals, that is, McCarron's team. I don't have an update on it, but I know that McDavid had a goal and three assists, and so McCarron's shutdown job getting a little bit blown out of the water this evening by the number one overall pick, likely heading to Edmonton, that's McDavid. But McCarron has been turning everyone's opinion of him on its head this season. First, it started in London with Max Domi, which was an absolute riot as the two of them tore things up offensively. And then his size and scoring touch seemed to be exactly what Oshawa wanted in order for them to reach the finals, which they have done against those Otters. But I got to tell you, his size, his defensive awareness, the ability to defend a guy like McDavid and getting the recognition for it, on top of having the ability to score, the soft hands, the developed skating, he has turned into a gem of a risk of a pick.
We've got that update. It's actually 5-5 right now between Erie and Oshawa.
Do we know who scored the fifth? Who scored for Oshawa, and has McCarron factored in this evening? Because I know that he was screening the Erie goaltender on the second goal, playing a big factor in that one.
Not much of a score sheet on the OHL website, so I can't really tell you who got assists. I can tell you that McDavid scored at 17:44 of the second period to make it 5-4.
Let's not pretend to use our imagination. The bottom line is that a big reason why the Erie Otters aren't running over the Oshawa Generals is because of Oshawa's decision to bring in McCarron as their shutdown number one center to play with Strome. He has been all of that and more, and he's you know, gotten the praise from all of the teams and opponents this year.
Just to answer your question, McCarron did get an assist on that second goal that he screened the goaltender on. You know, and looking forward, Montreal, we always talk about the fact that they need somebody in front of the net to screen goaltenders, especially after this series with the Tampa Bay Lightning, having dropped Game 6 to them. Mike McCarron can bring that. I mean, he doesn't necessarily have to be a first or second line player to start, but he can be a third line center or fourth line for that matter with spot duty on the power play to get his ass in front of the goaltender.
And our good buddy Tony chiming in on Twitter as well, notifying us that McCarron has been equally a beast in the faceoff circle, drawing in around the 70% mark or better. And I mean, you would expect that out of a guy who's 6'7" and has the ability to dominate over other guys on the faceoffs. Listen, he's not likely going to end up in Hamilton. He is almost assured of being a guy who's going to make the jump after many people assumed that he would take a long time to develop. His size, his maturity in this year alone, not only in his play, but in his words, his comments, and the way that people have reacted to him, it shows that he just might be a fit for the Montreal Canadiens next year. And then watch out, world. What happens when the Montreal Canadiens have an even bigger center issue? And I'm talking about 6'7", paired with your Plekanecs, your Desharnais, your Galchenyuks, your Ehlers. The list goes on. Canadiens are going to have to find some solutions in this. We can move on to another prospect, and I know you want to talk about Nikita Sherbak, Coach.
Yes, absolutely.
But before we get there, let's turn our attention to Charlie Hudon, who was a bit of a surprise in his own right as he led the AHL in scoring through the first half of the season, practically a strong candidate for AHL Rookie of the Year, and just an all-around surprisingly successful transition from junior in the queue to playing with Hamilton. Even though he's a small-sized guy, the hockey IQ is there. And you know what? For that in itself, maybe he alone is what makes David Desharnais expendable.
Oh, absolutely. I think he does make him expendable. Charlie Hudon had a fantastic season. The one thing that you can say about the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, despite the fact that they don't really develop that many defensemen, the one thing that they pride themselves on now is the fact that they develop forwards. The speed of the game in the queue is off the charts. It's faster than the OHL. It's faster than the WHL. The only difference is that they don't play a complete game, and that's why you see so many teams from the O and the WHL win Memorial Cups on a more regular basis. But in getting back to Hudon, Charlie Hudon is the complete package. He's a kid with a fantastic hockey IQ. He's got the entire skill set, and he listens.
You said, and I agree with you, that he, you know, as I said, and you compliment the fact that he is a perfect replacement for Desharnais, I would almost go so far as to say two birds, one stone in terms of the future lineup for the Montreal Canadiens. Hudon might be the combination of Desharnais and P.A. Parenteau in that he can fulfill a role on the wing or play center. He's got the skill and talent of both and perhaps better defensive awareness, meaning that one way or another, the Canadiens' pipeline has, in development, perhaps better versions of current players that they already have, and like I just pointed out, perhaps versions of players who can be better than combinations of players that they currently have. So I expect Hudon to also contend for a spot in the lineup next year. McCarron's a youngster who could step up. Let's talk about another youngster who perhaps needs to spend another year seasoning his play in the WHL, but maybe not. Maybe it's time for him to come to the AHL or even the Montreal Canadiens, Nikita Sherbak.
Look, we're talking about that right winger that needs, that scoring right winger that needs to complement Max Pacioretty. Nikita Sherbak fits the bill. 65 games this year with the Everett Silvertips of the Western Hockey League, 82 points. I mean, what more can you ask for from a kid who's 6'1", 185 pounds and still growing.
And just to add to that, I think that he finished 7th overall. I don't know if that's overall scoring in the W. I don't think so, but I think it was points per game.
Yes,
he finished 7th overall.
But more impressively, through all that 82 points, he finished with a plus 33. And a lot of times what you find with guys with high offensive skill is that number isn't quite as high as that. Of course, guys like McDavid, he finished at, what was it this year, plus 60 or some ridiculous number. But if you look at it, plus 33 in a league as offensively gifted as the Western Hockey League, and for a kid with his skill set, that speaks volumes as far as his development is concerned. Given the fact that his preseason was fantastic this year with the Montreal Canadiens, I don't see how they can take the time to send them back to junior, given that they're so hungry for offense.
So I stop you in your tracks and ask you, how do the Montreal Canadiens add so many more young players to their team next year? If these guys are that good, and we're finding that some current players on the roster might not be as good as the guys coming up, you can't just drop in 20-year-olds in the form of Sherbach, McCarron, and a 21-year-old in Hudon and expect this team to get all that much better.
You can, if and when the philosophy and identity of the team changes. If Montreal decides to go skill as opposed to defense first...
Does that not sound like Mike Babcock to you?
Okay, stop it!
Oh, I'm sorry!
Yes, it does sound like...
You can't handle the truth, can you?
No, I can. I would love to have Mike Babcock here, but you know what? I'm not going to keep my fingers crossed because the Montreal Canadiens have made dumb decisions in the past. I hope they don't do it this time around. I hope they do have a discussion with him at the very least, because the deadline's coming up, I believe, at the end of next week, as far as the window is concerned, for Mike Babcock to talk to people. But getting back to the guys like Sherbrek and McCarron, and you talk about Charlie Hudon and the possibility of a Daniel Carr playing with Montreal at certain points next year as well, he who led the Bulldogs in scoring. One thing, the constant there is the skill level. And so when you have that type of skill, add Max Pacioretty, add Alex Galchenyuk, add Thomas Plekanec, add whoever the hell you want at that point, and you've got more skill than you do grit, and you have to change the style of play for this hockey team.
So out of your current top nine, I think one thing you and I will agree on is that Alex Galchenyuk, Thomas Plekanec, Max Pacioretty, Brendan Gallagher, Lars Eller, Jakub Delarose, are fits.
Yes.
Devontae Smith-Pelly, Dale Weiss, and Brandon Prust
are your fourth line.
Should be your fourth line, along with another centerman in there, obviously.
Davey DeHarnay.
No, I don't think DeHarnay fits.
I don't think DeHarnay. I don't think he can have that. He doesn't survive the summer,
I don't think. If anything, Delarose should be your fourth line center.
But that's another discussion we could save for another show as far as, you know, who's trade bait.
Because we're just opening up spots in the roster for the youngsters that we're talking about. And you're talking about a McCarron who ripped up the OHL and is currently ripping it up as he plays in the finals and potentially challenging for the Memorial Cup.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about Nikita Sherbach and the excellent season that he's had. Another year, another step forward in his maturity process could find him ready for the NHL. Charlie Hudon had the seasoning experience of the AHL this year. That's a big step forward for him, too. What about Zach Fucale, who has been nothing short of the opposite of what he was in the regular season?
I think Zach Fucale is trade bait. Because given the play of Carey Price, Fucale's talent would be wasted as a backup goaltender. You're looking at teams like the Edmonton Oilers who are looking for blue-chip prospects, and today, Brian Wild of CTV, in his column, Call of the Wild, gave his own report card and mentioned this about Zach Fucale, where Fucale has the pedigree to be a number one goaltender in the National Hockey League. Much maligned earlier on in the season playing with the Halifax Mooseheads, he made the move to Quebec City where he absolutely blew the lights out. And so if I'm the Montreal Canadiens right now, I look at it this way. Dustin Tokarski doesn't bring any real value as a smallish goaltender. Zach Fucale is one of your better blue-chip prospects. If you're going to make a trade, possibly for a scoring winner, or if you're going to try to get rid of some other players that are on the roster as well in a trade, in the ilk of David DeHarnay or whoever else might be, the one thing that you have to do is you have to throw a team a bone as far as goaltending is concerned, especially teams like the Oilers who are looking for that blue-chipper. Even Tampa Bay, to a certain extent, they have Vasilevsky as their backup. They need somebody to be there for Ben Bishop should he falter. That's another possibility as well. Steve Eiserman's no idiot. If he sees that blue chipper, he may just go diving after it. So I think Fucale brings a lot of value, and he is the key piece in my mind moving forward before the draft, Montreal making a deal to try to get some guys off the roster to make room for the younger players.
Well, I think what we've done here is highlight the fact that you have the biggest of big centers coming into play for the Montreal Canadiens.
6'5", I believe, right?
6'7".
He's as big as Ben Bishop. Look at that.
That's right.
That's special.
This is what the Montreal Canadiens have been waiting for years.
Yep.
Nikita Sherbak, in the mold of a very flashy, highly talented scoring winger to complement a Max Pacioretty. Well, he's coming up. Your playmaking two-way center in Charlie Hudon is also there. You add in Zach Fucale, and things are set. Defenders, that's another story. We didn't talk quite a bit about the blue line, nor did we talk much about the defensemen
coming
quickly, up
though,
through the ranks.
Want.
Well, I think it just ties in together, because before we have a quick chat about Fucale and the package that maybe Bergevin is going to be dangling in the summer, you have to consider whether or not Jeff Petrie played well enough to earn the outstanding UFA dollars everybody thinks he will deserve.
He will.
Or if the Montreal Canadiens will re-sign him and potentially move a guy like Alexi Emelin, who ran into confidence issues this season.
I believe that Jeff Petrie's wife cleared that up very quickly by saying she wants to go home to Detroit. I think he's going to sign in Detroit. I don't think anybody else is going to be able to get him off the market.
Well, you never know, but I'll tell you what, buddy.
It's like in the movie The Big Fat Greek Wedding, okay? The man might be the head, but the woman's the neck. So if she says Detroit, I'm telling you it's Detroit. Just look at at Chris Pronger.
It's the tail that wags
the
dog.
To him, right?
We know how that rolls. Listen, I'll tell you what. If that's the case, then I hope that the trade involves Mike Babcock coming back for the Montreal Canadiens. But
again,
Jeff Petrie was great for the Montreal Canadiens.
He was.
He filled a role that, like last year when Thomas Vanek showed up and offered secondary scoring support for Max Pacioretty, Jeff Petrie showed that P.K. Subban can use a little boost of his own. Now, Nathan Beaulieu might be that guy, and I certainly do expect him to graduate to that role in a secondary pairing next year with the Montreal Canadiens. Tom Gilbert should regress a second year on his contract with
should
the Montreal Canadiens.
A butt-kicking and leave town.
You know what? Halfway through, you know, there's halfway through the contract, there's a lot to like and a lot not to like, but
more not to like, as far as I'm concerned anyway.
But if he can find a place on a third pairing with a Greg Pattern or a Jared Tenorti, that might be successful for the Montreal Canadiens. Who plays with Nathan Beaulieu next year, to me,
P.K. Subban.
Ooh, P.K. Subban is your... So, look, do you throw Andre Markov under the bus as well?
No.
With Andre Markov?
Andre Markov was overused.
Yes.
This year. I mean, no argument to be had there. Honestly, if I'm Marc Bergevin, seeing what he brought to the table, I am pairing up Andre Markov with Greg Pattern. I think that Greg Pattern and his ability to play defense in his own zone with a stable defensive partner, as he's shown since being called up from Hamilton, is the perfect partner for a guy like Andre Markov. Pattern can move the puck. Pattern can be physical. Pattern plays the position very, very well. And I think that second pairing would be off the charts good, given what they can bring to the table.
And to go all the way around full circle, Pattern has also displayed himself as a viable NHL asset with
Absolutely.
Experience now that Marc Bergevin could feel free to dangle.
He can no longer sign him to a two-way contract.
No, that's
His
correct.
His next contract is an NHL deal.
And a deserved NHL deal he will get.
Yes.
It's just whether it remains with the Montreal Canadiens and whether Zach Fucale, maybe Charlie Hudon, maybe Daniel Carr, maybe Sven Andraghetto. There are a lot of guys in the system that can be dangled.
And we got to get to the elephant in the room, though. And that is Jared Tenorti. You talk about Alexi Emelin possibly being moved. That possibility is also there for Jared Tenorti, not because he hasn't developed. He's gotten into his own head, and he's allowed his father to get into his head. His dad, Mark Tenorti, should know better than what he did this year. Twice getting in on the media, twice chirping about why his son should be in the National Hockey League. Look, you are a proud father of an aspiring hockey player. I understand the emotion behind that. I understand you wanting him to get there eventually, and he will. Jared Tenorti was not ready. There was something wrong between the ears. He finished off the season with a wrist injury. That's why he played so poorly in the playoffs for the most part. We saw him live ourselves in Hamilton 2 days back-to-back when you had D-Skate night with the Hamilton Bulldogs,
and he did not look any different than he did in the National Hockey League, making the same mistakes, playing at the same speed, despite the fact that the game in the AHL was slower.
Look, I think the injury is actually a good thing for him. I think the fact that his season ended before the Canadians had a chance to call him up and use him in the playoffs when he wasn't prepared is a good thing. The changes in the Hamilton Bulldogs situation, the fact that they are moving to Newfoundland, all of these changes will likely impact Tenorti in that he won't want to go to Newfoundland. He's going to want to stay in the NHL this year. But is he going to stay with the Montreal Canadiens? And that's where these holes that open up on the blue line, much like with the Montreal Canadiens offense, youngsters have to come up and fill them in. But perhaps on defense is where the Montreal Canadiens work out a trade, work out something to gain experience over chancing it on a guy like Tenorti, when perhaps Tenorti and Fucale go together somewhere, perhaps Edmonton.
That's very possible. But hear me out here. If, since we're talking about Emelin possibly being traded, okay, because at the end of the day, he would be your 5-6 making over $4 million a year. If you can trade Emelin and allow Jarrett Tenorti to develop in the 5-6 position with Montreal, do you keep him at that point?
You keep him if there isn't an outstanding offer on your doorstep,
of course,
of greater value, and that's the only reason you keep him at this point. I think that with a Brett Lernoux in the system, I think with Darren Dietz showing good signs this season in his development, you look at Dalton Thrower, who had a terrible year this year, but is a highly ranked prospect, a former captain of the Saskatoon Blades, Vancouver Giants, physical player, offensive upside. There's hope on the blue line. It all bases around PK Subban. I think Nathan Beaulieu earned it. Jarrett Tenorti's got to show that he can earn it. But at this point, maybe he's gone past that point. Much like Zach Fucale, in that, well, he has resurrected his season with Quebec and actually putting on what some people are calling the best goaltending performance in CHL playoff history, all the better for Marc Bergevin and the Montreal Canadiens this summer. As I said, Edmonton has got a lot of prospects. They are about to get a little more love in the form of Connor McDavid and even greater picks, as the second and third and fourth rounds always yield some gems. Bottom line is they're going to be ready to wheel and deal. Do you go looking to pick out of them or elsewhere? Because quite frankly, the UFA market is
bare.
Not going to help you.
It's bare.
Whatsoever.
It's bare. The only guy that I would even give a sniff on the free agent market, other than, of course, signing Jeff Petrie and keeping him here in Montreal, would be a guy like Paul Martin. Paul Martin's a free agent. He may be able to complement some of the younger guys on the team, but he's the only guy I would look at. Everybody else isn't worth a second look.
No, and it's difficult to sign a guy like that when you have a Tom Gilbert already.
True.
Because you want to be replacing a Tom Gilbert, and you don't sign a Paul Martin if you still have a Gilbert and if you haven't moved an Alexi Emelin.
If you're replacing a Tom Gilbert, though, give it to a young guy. I don't want to see the same mistake made as last year. I didn't agree with the Gilbert signing because of the fact that I thought Patterson was ready. Patterson proved me right. Gilbert's excess on this team right now. If you can't trade him, bury him, do something. But before you give Tom Bill Gilbert any ice, and before you go out there looking for a UFAD, the guys that you talked about coming out of Hamilton, they're the guys that deserve the spot.
And you know what? He's got a contract, too. And as much as Alexi Emelin also has that contract, one thing about Tom Gilbert is that he seemed to fit better with what everybody wants to be the mold for this team moving forward. He's a better transition defenseman than Alexi Emelin is. Alexi Emelin's a good stay-at-home guy. He's definitely got the boom when it's working right for him. But the confidence issues this year showed that he may not be worth the price tag if he's not on his game. Markov getting older, you don't seem to have a pairing fit for Emelin in terms of a guy he's bonded and found chemistry with. Perhaps it's time to move on, as he would have some value on an absolutely depleted UFA market, in return bringing you, perhaps, added value up front. You open up a youngster spot on defense, and when we look up front, we say all these youngsters have to fill in roles for the Montreal Canadiens. Well, maybe you got to trade and bring in some experience up front as well, because if you're going to be plugging McCarrans and Sherbacks and Hudons in, you damn well better find a way to get an Eric Staal, perhaps, or a Patrick Sharp, or someone who is going to have to leave a team either for reasons of cap situation or simply needing a change, not wanting to be there anymore. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't necessarily want a Joe Thornton, but you know he's going to be available this summer along with a Patrick Marleau. So there's guys out there, and the Canadians are in a good position.
We're just about ready to close this baby out. Very quickly, Steve, your top four guys from the Montreal Canadiens that are trade bait come this summer.
Well, I think we talked about them right here and now. It's Zach Fucale, Jarrett Tinorti, Alexi Emelin, and, well, I guess you got to go with Desharnais.
I would agree. But you know, I would not be surprised, outside of Pacioretty, Gallagher, Spike Subban, and Carey Price, I wouldn't be surprised if anybody moves.
Well, Alex Galchenyuk's in that group too, right?
Alex Galchenyuk as well, of course. Yeah, those five. I would not be surprised if outside of those guys, anybody is trade bait for the Montreal Canadiens. They're so close, they can taste it. And with the influx of youth, I think that that could change the whole dynamic in this, with a couple of moves this summer.
Absolutely can, as is the case when you have a well-managed and well-built team over a couple of years. When the off season approaches, you have the ability to make yourself better. You also have the ability to make yourself worse. One thing that the Montreal Canadiens cannot afford to do is remain silent. And when it's a crappy UFA year, that means Marc Bergevin has the advantage because he's always the guy who sets the bar. He's always the guy who's active in the market. And this summer, he's going to be the guy with mature, young assets other teams are going to want, and the ability to move them around and fill out that lineup to make them better for 2015-16.
We are done, sir. We've gone a little bit long to pacify the fans because it's going to be a long summer, perhaps.
We'll be around, and we will be talking about this. We were just having a chat before we went on air. We're going to be around all summer long. We haven't determined our schedule, but we're going to be here for the draft. We're going to be here for free agency.
That's right.
And we're going to be around for the moves for the Montreal Canadiens to make sure you're up to date. Oh, and by the way, we will be having a lot of awesome guests on because, well, we have the ability to do that too.
Because we're awesome people. That's why. It's going to be fun. Steve, it's been an interesting month with us watching this show. A lot of success, a lot of team building, but overall I think there's a lot to look forward to as far as Breaking Habs Radio is concerned. If there's anything as far as you, the fans, want to see us do on this show, feel free to drop us a line. The email address is info@breakinghabsradio.net, and we'll take a look and see whether or not those ideas can be filtered into the show, and we'll just make it better and better as we go along. For Stephen Hindle, I am Costa Papoulias. We'll see you next time on Breaking Habs Radio. Night, everybody.